There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that.
This is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile, hour number two on this Monday. Yeah, coming off the first hour, a mix of... And we'll get to these texts here in just a little bit. A mix of gambling in the state of Alabama... Hamas accepting a ceasefire that we haven't heard if Israel is or not. And also in the mix, so gambling, parental leave, Hamas, and pickles, and the possible pickle shortage going forward. So, yeah, it's a good good grab bag from the first hour. We'll continue that this hour because y'all know this guy's voice. I don't get to talk to him as much as I used to, but it's always a treat to check in with our staff meteorologist, Dr. Bill Williams. Good afternoon, Doc.
Oh, good afternoon.
And of course, we'll be getting you on the show here as we get closer to the June 1st and the start of hurricane season. But
right.
Forecasting is the key here, and it's pretty interesting. I saw a picture from the Coastal Weather Research Center. It was taken in there of recipients. These look like bright-eyed kids that have chosen to be in the world of meteorology, scholarship winners for 2024. Tell me about these kids.
Yeah, they're good. And the awards that you're talking about, where scholarships are given to students who are already here, and when they reach their sophomore or junior year, and those who excel are eligible to pick up some scholarship money. Dr. Bill Williams endowed scholarship actually resulted from several years ago, more than several years ago, but as a result of some DVDs that we did on Hurricane Katrina Ivan.
Yeah, remember those well. Still got my copies sitting there at the house.
And yeah, and the money that we got from all the sale of those DVDs resulted in a scholarship fund. And it has worked out very, very well over the years. And as you see in that photograph that I sent you, we had 10, and one student couldn't make it for that picture, but we had 10 in the photograph, 10 students that picked up scholarship money, and they can apply it either to their junior or senior year at USA.
Let's talk. I want to get into the school as well, but first, where do you see kids going? I mean, there's only so many on-air positions, right? People think meteorologists, they think, oh, Dr. Bill, he's on the radio, or folks on TV. But that's not the lion's share, is it? Where are the kids coming out of the program at South? Where do they go?
Yeah, a number of jobs. Of course, the National Weather Service hires meteorologists and is the big employer. But television, of course, particularly television and radio across the country. We are producing quite a few now students that are going out for television work. Things like emergency management agencies, many go into teaching, into research, and also into the military. The Air Force also has quite a few, as you can imagine, quite a few meteorologists.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, we do Veterans Month every year in November here, and I know talking to one, he had been in, he's serving, and then went back to do his schoolwork and was saying, like, listen, man, when I finish this, meteorology program at the University of South Alabama, here, and he started laying out the doors that opened for him in the Air Force. It was something. I mean, it was like with his Air Force training and then meteorology, it was like, he's like, man, they're jockeying for me to go multiple places.
Yeah, they'll go up pretty fast in rank when they're meteorologists. They do quite well. So also there's a private sector meteorology that has grown over the years. AccuWeather, many people have heard of that. That's one of the really big private weather services.
Yeah, so there, I mean, there's forecasting for the general public, but there's also, you talk about some of the private sector too, there's forecasting specific for businesses and industry, right? I mean, think about anybody who has exposure with their business for weather, they want to have the best information right away.
Well, that's what we do here. In addition to our meteorology program, back in 1988, I developed the Coastal Weather Research Center, and we work with business and industry, and we have companies from Texas to South Florida on up to the Carolinas, a whole variety of different companies, cities also, and shipbuilding, electric industry, and they all need that specialized information that we can provide to business and industry. We know what their needs are in particular.
You know, I've been so pleased to watch the growth growth at the University of South Alabama over the years. And it's really, I guess, picked up heads, you know, real head speed here in the last decade. And I think about your time, what, 40 plus years ago at the University of South Alabama to where the program is now. Talk about that. Like where when you walked in, what the meteorology program was at the University of South Alabama and what it looks like now.
Well, I started at the university in March of 1967.
Wow.
And, yeah, I was teaching a weather course, meteorology class, for many, many years. And then the big break came to develop a meteorology program. And that wasn't until 1992. So I started that program. And it actually started within the within geography. And we had built the program up, and then we went for the Bachelor of Science degree in meteorology, which would be the first one in the state of Alabama, and that was approved in 1999. And I went up with to Montgomery to meet with the officials and, of course, our university representatives. And as it turned out, we had that approved on National Weather Person's Day, which I think worked out pretty neat. And we started the Bachelor of Science in Meteorology. And this year we're at, we're at our 25th anniversary this year of our Bachelor of Science degree.
It's really a testament, Dr. Bill, to see that grow and, you know, along with all the other growth going on at the University of South Alabama. So congratulations to you once you got rolling there and these students coming out, getting scholarships and students out forecasting for us now. Tip of the hat to you, Doc.
Well, thank you. And anybody that is listening that has a son or daughter that is interested in meteorology or they know somebody that's interested in degree work at the university. It's math-oriented. That is, if you have a good background in mathematics, and that makes it a lot easier to go through the program. But you can get in touch with the admissions office at USA, and they can provide a tour of the university, and also included in that would be a stop at the Coastal Weather Research Center. And it's a nice thing to take advantage of, and we have all this activity right here in Mobile.
Yeah, if people have ever seen that, it is a treat to see it. I remember the first time going there with you, I went to meet you there for something. And I was like, you're like, yeah, you go here and go to the Mitchell Center and then go underneath. And it's like it's a little bit of a bunker there for the center.
Yeah, and we started out in the Life Science Building, then to the Mitchell Center, and now we're over in what used to be the I can't even remember the name of that the building at the time, but it's been renovated, and we now have some really nice headquarters at USA.
It's great. I mean, and kids, yes. I mean, the reason Dr. Bill wouldn't have me in his program is the math thing. I tried to say, hey, what can I do it without math? He said, no, Sullivan, you can't. But a kid shows some proficiency in that, and parents that would love to see that kind of study plan and them staying at home. Great school right here in our own backyard to do it, Doc. So thank you for making that possible for people from here. And I know you get students travel in from all over the country to go to school here. So I'm proud
they
of
they are coming from all over the country. And we are producing quite a few TV meteorologists. We have our own studio, and they get plenty of practice. And Now there are people that TV stations are seeing them on the internet, and they're getting jobs out of USA. And we have people at some big markets like in New Orleans and Atlanta.
Good stuff. And all this scholarship, if people remember those DVDs you put out, that scholarship awarded coming from those DVDs. I loved them. Hopefully you won't have any need to do those anytime soon for another name story.
Oh, that's for sure. Yeah.
Just keep it that way. All right, Dr. Bill, we appreciate it. Be listening for you tomorrow morning with Dan and Dalton.
Okay, Sean.
All right, there he goes. Staff meteorologist Dr. Bill Williams. And man, 40 years here in our area, 40 plus years of forecasting. Love to have him as part of this radio station, but his legacy at the University of South Alabama is something. All right, coming right back. More Midday Mobile, 343-0106. We'll talk next.
Walking around the room singing stormy weather at 57 Mount Pleasant Street. Well, it's the same room, but everything's different. You can find the sleep, but not the
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 121 FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile on this Monday. Hey, y'all. Got the rest of the week to work with. Also, looking at this on the road with the show coming up Friday at the Eco Wild event going on. It's Friday and Saturday. We'll be out there for this show Friday at the Convention Center. Talk more about that on tomorrow's show. Give you more details on the event. And I did look, I think, I'm going through the FM Talk 106.5 buckets like crazy here, but I may continue. Takes more buckets out to the event. You know, these are the real cool rope-handled FM Talk 106.5 logoed buckets. And bring some out to Eco Wild. So if you're going to be out there, plan on that to stop by. And I don't know, we'll have some. We can't have a game of what we can't. We have to have a game of skill, right? We can't have a game of chance because that would be gambling to win. Okay, we'll figure that out. We'll figure out what legislation passes between now and Friday. Hey, this segment of the show brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK. So that's my buddy Trey. He's been getting junk gone in Mobile and Baldwin County for 16 years plus now. I know because he was doing it before we even launched FM Talk 106.5. So many people have used him. You can see their reviews over at the Google reviews for 1-800-GOT-JUNK. You can listen to so many of us here, like me, that have used. I've used him personally. I've used him for this radio station, cleaning out houses, cleaning out storage units. If you got junk and you need it gone, you need 1-800-GOT-JUNK, and he can do this, you know, like on a specific day at a specific time, which is important, right? When you have a real life. In other words, it's not one of these services where they'll say, well, you got to be there all day Tuesday, and we'll show up during some point on Tuesday. No, when you go online or pick up the phone, we'll talk about the contact. When you do that, they'll find a day that works for you and the time of day that works for you. They set the appointment, and all you got to do is point to the junk you want gone. It could be stuff outside your house, inside your house, inside a carport, storage unit, business office, you know, a shop, anywhere you're getting junk on. You point at that, they'll quote you a price there on the spot. You say yes, they get to work and get it done. So make that appointment with 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Online, 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com, or pick up the phone. The name is the number, 1-800-GOT-JUNK, and get my buddy Trey and his crew to come out and get the junk gone for you. All right, to the text line here, and by the way, too, coming up in just about 10 minutes, State Senator Greg Allbritton is going to join me. Of course, so much has been discussed about his no vote on this gambling bill, even though he was the one that carried it in the Senate. Although, as I said to Todd Stacey last hour, that's just like headline material. Person who carries bills votes no. Well, the bill as carried in the Senate and what came out of the conference committee are not the same bill. So to expect that people would say just because they voted for it in the Senate and then it goes and gets changed, then comes back to them, they'd be a yes vote again. I think that's a little simplistic here, but we'll get the senator to tell us his opinion on it coming up in just a little bit. Plus, if you have specific questions for the senator on his vote, you can always text those in to 343-0106. All right, a lot of pickles talk here. The wicked. So Pat is saying, next time you're in Publix, find the wicked dill pickles. You won't regret it. I might check them out. A few of the others I've checked out, I just don't like them as much as the Hottie Bites. But maybe those are the ones I'd like. And here's Roy saying there's some high-end pickles at, in Publix BOGO this week. Well, we'll BOGO them up, man. You know, Haywood talking about the pickle shortage. Now he has to make his own. Well, here's the right. So, Haywood, I have the components, right? So I grow jalapenos and I grow cucumbers. But the putting them together to make the jalapeno juice and do the, I think I'm out. I'm outside my league. I'll continue to produce those separately. And then go buy the, whatever the formula is they have to use to make the pickles, like the spicy pickles. I'll continue to buy those. Still waiting on word from Israel here, whether they're going to sign on to the Hamas-accepted ceasefire deal. As I mentioned earlier, just because Hamas said they would take it, I heard nothing from the State Department. State Department, not like personally, I didn't get on the phone, but there's nothing out from the State Department that they're signing on to it. There is supposed to be a presser out of Israel. I have not seen that yet. Fox News is reporting that Hamas says they approve framework for ceasefire agreement with Israel. Hamas statement says they approve ceasefire framework put forward by Egypt and Qatar, but Israel remains silent. Don't you think that's probably a pretty big part of this? Said the, okay, here we go. So this is kind of what we just said. The White House and State Department could not confirm the agreement as of press time, but a Hamas spokesman confirmed it to Fox News Digital. Israel has not announced its stance on the framework. If it is approved, however, it would bring an extended pause to the fighting that has raged in Gaza for 7 months. All right, the Hamas statement here, it says, what is this coming? Who's this coming from? It said, the fighter brother Ismail Haniyeh, head of political bureau in the Hamas movement, had a phone call with the Qatari Prime Minister Sheikh Mohammed bin Abdul Rahman Al Thani and with Egyptian Minister of Intelligence Mr. Abbas Kamel and informed them of Hamas's movement's approval of the proposal regarding the ceasefire agreement. That's coming from the, I guess, the press release from Hamas. News of the agreement comes as Israel appeared to be preparing for a ground assault on Rafah, the final stronghold of Hamas in Gaza. The city's also playing host to more than 1 million Gazans displaced from the north. Now, remember, Israel told the Gazans to go south, right? Yeah, the north, y'all go to Rafah. Well, you'll be good in Rafah. Go down there. So the people go to Rafah, and now they're saying, yeah, by the way, we're going to go into Rafah. And they said there's some nearby refugee facility to the north of Rafah where they're telling them to go and shelter there. Yeah, it says Israel urged Palestinians to flee Rafah ahead of the expected operation. Overnight Sunday, Israeli Defense Minister Yoav Gallant told U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin that Israel was left with no choice but to act in Rafah after Hamas terrorists carried out a deadly rocket attack from Rafah earlier in the day that left four Israeli soldiers dead. But think about this for a second, and still believe in Israel's right to defend itself. But you got these Palestinians, these Gazans, that fled with whatever they could carry with them from their homes in the middle and the north part of Gaza down to Rafah. They get down there, and I don't know what accommodations are made down there in the camps or whatever. The people are starving. And then you say, okay, now you got to leave there and go somewhere else. How the people, the non-combatants are dealing with this, it's a lot. I mean, these people don't have anything. Now, what do you do? I mean, if a ceasefire is signed, does that mean that Israel doesn't go into Rafah? Is it that the threat of going into Rafah is what Hamas got Hamas to say they agreed to a ceasefire? Don't know. But we will be getting more on this, I guess. We're supposed to get a update here. White House briefing says Hamas agrees to ceasefire deal. No mention of hostages in this either. So they're. Let's see. So there's no, I guess there's not any talk about the return of the hostages in this. We'll wait. All we know is that Hamas has said yes, they agreed to it. None of the other players in the mix have. So we'll wait for a White House press briefing. And then more importantly than whatever Kirby has to say would be what the Israelis have to say, I would imagine. All right. Coming back, State Senator Greg Allbritton's going to join me. We'll talk about his vote no on this reconstructed gambling plan that came out of the conference committee. We'll do that coming up next right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 135, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. And I agree. Doesn't have Met on the text line, said, you know, after we talked to staff meteorologist Dr. Bill Williams at the beginning of the hour, scholarship program at the University of South Alabama in meteorology. He said, just feels wrong to call Dr. Bill the staff meteorologist. Yeah. He says, maybe the Grand Czar Supreme Meteorologist or his Weather Excellency. Yeah, you know what? I like those. I mean, 40-plus years, a guy that started the meteorology program at the University of South Alabama, and look what it's done now. Look at the students coming out of there. Look at Coastal Weather Research Center, everything that's happened. So many great things to talk about with South Alabama, and Doc's been doing it for decades and decades. So, a tip of the hat, and I agree with you. All right, as I mentioned, joining us right now, it's his name's already come up, I don't know, 7 or 8 times on today's show, let alone before. State Senator Greg Allbritton joining us. Thanks for your time.
Thank you for having me.
There's a lot to go through. I just remember last time you and I talked, and I've referenced that it was back in mid-session, and you talked about what had come out of the Senate in this in the gambling bill. And you, but even at that point, you weren't cheerleading. You said, well, let's just wait and see, right? You said, let's wait and see what happens with this. Well, who would have known that on my side, so many things would have happened before y'all had another vote last week where you, a person who carried the bill the first time in the Senate, were a no vote on what had come out of this conference committee.
Yep, that's right. After not only carrying here, but carrying bills, getting them through the Senate 2 or 3 other times too.
The bill that what came out of the Senate, that you carried, that bill that came out of the Senate, in, maybe in percentages, or I don't know how to say it, with what came out of conference committee, are they 50% similar, 75% similar? What is there a kind of something for us to get our hands around this?
I don't know if I can put a percentage on it. As far as what the Senate, the differences between the Senate version and the House version was almost night and day.
Mm-hmm.
The conference report was an attempt to try to pull those two far ends back together that would obtain the necessary votes. I wouldn't say it got any closer because it took different divergence from the others that were problematic and certainly was troublesome for me.
Those, if you had to talking about those divergent things that were most troublesome to you, what parts of the bill is it in the number of places for gambling? Is it where the revenue goes to? Is it what parts? Like, help us understand it.
I'll do my best. Keep in mind, this is a complicated issue. It's something that we've argued about and dealt with many, many times. It's almost like it's a cut and paste. We've talked about everything. You just, you know, swap phrases back and forth. But frankly, and from my analysis here, from what knocked me into the other court, if you will,
okay,
was basically 3 major items. The first was that we left sports gaming completely out of this. Sports gaming, dealing with all the matters that go on that's prevalent and continues to grow in our society, and certainly in Alabama. And we just left it out. We chose not to control it. We chose not to deal with it. We just ignored it, and it will become a Wild West as it is now, only it will continue unabated completely. That's a problem for me.
Okay, so you're saying with the sports gaming, you're saying that because it wasn't included, it will be continue to be done illegally, or
yeah, okay, it will. Okay. It'll continue to be done. We're not going to stop it. We're not going to be able to stop it.
All right, I just
and it'll continue illegally, and it'll grow. And if we choose to do anything with it later, that means we've got to go back and do a completely new CA, meaning opening up this whole package that we got again and dealing with it again.
Gotcha.
That's something I do not want to do.
Okay, so that's number 1. Number 2 here.
Online gaming. By that, I mean anything that's online that can be done either in the home. Right now, you pull up your phone, you can play the slots. In Greene County, right now, online live, on your phone, on your computer. You can do that with other facilities, wherever they are. in the U.S. or anywhere in the world. You get the proper app, and you can do it without any controls, without any knowledge of anything other than the people that's taking your money. And Alabama just closes their eyes to that and lets it go. That will also continue to grow. Not only will those continue to plague our society, but we don't gain anything from it. We have the ills, but we don't have the resources to deal with it. Those two items were extremely troublesome.
Can on the online thing, people using, I guess, VPNs or something like that to get around if they're not there in Greene County, could they? But they could also play them elsewhere, right? I mean, they could play them some other state that has them, or is it just
sure?
Okay,
sure, yeah.
So you're saying that people are going to do this? So it's really an idea, if I'm taking this correctly, your no vote is, hey, y'all aren't addressing all parts of this. Is it that there's stuff that's left out of this bill that you think should be in?
That is correct. We're leaving. My whole aspect of this is not that I'm a gambler, want to be, never have been. Or I've tried it a couple of times, didn't pan out, okay? But the point is that Alabama needs to take control of this industry. That's our obligation and responsibility. And to do this half-meal, piecemeal, cannot be done. And I think this is an illustration of it. We've got to grab this whole thing. And until we do, it's going to continue to plague us without any benefits.
You know, Senator, on the, and I was talking about this last hour, on the way I understand this, and correct me, but the electronic where they said, well, you know, it's not going to be table games, but there's these electronic versions of table games. What's the dang difference? I mean, if we're going to do it, then to me, maybe the difference you could argue is the jobs that were promised may not come with it. It could be a gambling kiosk. You go in and put your card in and play. I mean, why is that a part that comes out of it? It says, well, we'll do it, but there won't be any live dealers or anything.
Exactly. I did not agree with that. I think that is we're putting it out there. We're going to do the whole thing, if you will. But remember, those that were authorizing were they were going to be online, but they were going to be in the brick and mortar. They were on site. Okay, those same things are available online.
Yeah. So why would you go
right now?
Yeah. So why would you go to the place to play?
Precisely. And so anyway, it makes, and we just chose to ignore that in the legislation.
You know, the people will ask, they're already, I'm going to get to some of the text questions here, but one that I'll ask is the value or lack in value to the Porch Panda Creek Indians. You were quoted in a Alabama Daily News story saying that had this new deal coming out here had nothing to offer PCI. Explain that for people to understand why the Porch Panda Creek Indians would enter into a compact with the state, where their benefit is.
Sure. Let me go back. I've talked about two items, the sports gaming and the online. Now, the third reason that I voted for this that pushed me over is my constituents. Yes. And that is, in every previous version that we've had in gaming, there has always been the statement and the attempt to enter into a compact with PCI, the state of Alabama with PCI. That does two things. Number one is it gives the state the ability to receive revenue from those gaming activities at the three reservation sites.
Which they do not now, right? They do not have that now. So that's a benefit to the state that it does not have. Okay.
Exactly. The other thing is this would provide PCI the opportunity to play, if you will, in this industry as an equal player. In essence, previously, there was an offer or a discussion of offer, a fourth site, someplace off reservation property that would be taxed, set up, required, state regulated, not federal regulated, and that would be completely under the rule and guidance of the state of Alabama and subject to the same taxation as everybody else.
Would that taxation also then, you know, who knows what the compact would look like, but just general idea here. If a compact was agreed to, you would have the taxation from the facility, the fourth facility you're talking about, to be built. Would the state then be able to get revenue from the three present facilities?
Correct. Well, they would. That's okay. What the compact would do. They would receive a portion from each of the three on on reservation lands, facilities, and full taxation on that on state land.
So with coming from PCI's perspective, this deal as it sits right now doesn't incentivize that because it doesn't have that fourth location, right?
Well, that's one thing. That is correct. But it does, goes further than that in the conference report that came out. And that is, not only did it not offer a fourth facility, a fourth site, but there's language in the bill that would prevent the governor, when she goes to enter into a compact, if she chooses to, could not put that on the table, could not allow PCI to be anywhere except on reservation property, and would prevent the PCI from ever expanding out to anything along that line. It just put them in a major significant box. It didn't give PCI the opportunity, or the state of Alabama the opportunity, to negotiate and for valid consideration to move in that direction to get into a compact. It just shut the door there.
It seems to me in the past in these debates, it has been this balance of what PCI would get and what the legacy dog track, for lack of a better term, folks would get. And it was this, okay, you get this, we get this, you get this, we get this. In your description here, legacy dog track seems to be getting what they want. PCI is not getting, I guess, anything.
Well, that may be an overstatement, but that's an accurate perception, yes. However, comma, it's more importantly about what the state gets. That's the concern here, too, what the state can do. In the package that I passed, in the package the House passed, we were looking at the state of benefiting somewhere between $750, $850 million, all told, okay, mm-hmm. assuming everything went into play. In the current package that's there, we would have the lottery, which would produce maybe $200 million a year, and then the taxation on the other seven facilities, which has limited accessibility. So we're talking, we're going down from the, let's say, $800 million down to maybe $400 million, but maybe a little less in that way.
So, from my, not inside the Senate view of this, I've argued many times that what is being offered here, it's not specifically saying that if you're against it, you're against opening gambling in the state of some sort. But my view is this the best deal we can get? Now, people will say, okay, but y'all are never going to get around to it in Montgomery, right? Your thoughts on that if you don't pass it now, you're never getting it done.
Well, I would rather pass no bill than a limited bill that would could cause more harm than good. Because gambling, as I mentioned, the sports and the online is not going to go away. Not at all. And if we open these up, we're going to have all forms of gambling, and everybody's going to want to do the same thing. We will not have the resources for full enforcement with this plan either. We won't have the means to go statewide to shut everything down. So we'll have a situation more and expansive game than ever in Alabama without the means to enforce it and without Alabama receiving any benefit from it.
Yeah, that has been what you're saying, talking about. There's been one of my frustrations, though. I know that there's only so many resources, but it is interesting to me that the discussion is like, hey, we need to get this passed so we can crack down on people breaking the law. I'm just a silly stick in the mud, said either way, let's crack down on people. Either the law is the law or it's not, right?
Let me give you an example. Okay. I'll really get my butt in trouble on this one, okay? So I know that going in. A couple of years ago, the State House folks decided that the rent-a-cops were not providing adequate security. They wanted to go and use Aaliyah. Okay.
Okay.
That's fine. We said fine. But Aaliyah says, we're going to have more responsibility. We're going to charge you more. So Aaliyah sends us a few cops over during session in particular to watch a few doors. Not the full building, only a few places, okay? Limited.
Okay.
They're charging us, and they're walking across the street to do that, okay? And they're charging us almost $700,000 to $1 million every year to do that. Now, if we're going to use ALEA to enforce this gambling issue all over the state, and we have who knows how many illegals out there, not counting the digitized and everything else, if we're going to try to do that, how much is that going to cost? It's going to cost a lot more than the $300 to $400 million we're getting all told out of this package.
So you think we could end up losing money on this if you pass the bill as it's, or the what the conference committee came out with, and then you want to do enforcement on top of that?
I think that is my concern, certainly, that we wind up paying money to expand the game and, rather than gaining money.
If you're just joining us, talking to Senator Albritton, it was a no vote on what came out of the conference committee after he had been the person who carried the bill and has before in the Senate, but this thing doesn't look the same. I want to ask a couple questions from the text line, Senator. This one from Adam said, is there anything that would keep a legislator from voting for the CA, so that, you know, the in the House 151, and not voting for specific gambling legislation like 152 in the House? Is there anything that would keep a representative or a senator from voting yes and no?
Yes. Yes, there is. Yes, there is. And that is that we have tied them both together in the language of the bills. If one fails, the other one fails. If we vote for both of them and the CA fails at the polls, then both go away.
But, the CA can't pass on its own if the supporting legislation doesn't pass.
Correct. Correct.
Fred says, Senator Albritton's correct. We're just letting more and more money go to other states. Mississippi's laughing all the way to the bank. Set a gaming commission and sell licenses and allow all forms of gaming, including a lottery. Is that going to happen? You catching your breath? There's an answer.
We need to have a comprehensive plan that will work financially, that can be enforced, and can be regulated. We presented three or four plans to the legislature to accomplish that. None of them have been accepted to date. This idea of let's pass a clean lottery and get a compact. Let's just do that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Two problems with that. If you do a compact, again, what good's a compact going to do PCI on the three sites that they've got? Not a lot, okay? Right. Not a lot. The second thing is, what in the world, I'm on radio, what in the world can does a clean lottery look like? It is the largest extension and expansion of gaming we could have. It puts gaming, legal gaming, supposedly, at every crossroads,
mm-hmm.
at every hamlet, right down the street from you. That is the biggest expansion. And the amount that we gain from it, from the lottery in Alabama at this point in time, is going to be significantly less than everybody thinks it is.
Another question coming in here from Todd in Grand Bay said, if they pass the bill, can't they go back and add amendments to it later?
No. When you said pass the bill, you're talking about the CA, assuming.
Yeah, probably 151.
If you change the CA, you're going to open the whole ball of wax up every time you try to change it.
Now, you mentioned the expansion with lottery, let's say clean lottery, and it has it everywhere. I'm not, personally, I don't fear it going everywhere, because I think the market eventually, will, there's only so many gambling establishments that can, support themselves. You see it in other states, they build one too many, it shuts down, and then we arrive at the amount that it's supposed to be. But it seems like we're not even going to let it meet that headroom with these bills, right? It's limited to the 7 or 8. You would never even let the market decide how many places it could go.
Correct.
So you are so really with what you're seeing now, you're not changing your vote. That's what it sounds like.
No, I can't change the vote until we change the bill.
No matter how many people they got calling you, you and other senators out there, and how much they're putting on social media about y'all.
I see it all. Facebook, email, phone calls, text. Yeah, I get it. I understand. Some of them even coming from other states and other places, okay? I understand all that. But I got to make the call. I got to make the vote, and that's where I am.
There you go. Senator, I appreciate your time today, and we'll be talking to you here, what, three more legislative days, and we'll see if the governor decides to call a special.
Well, let me suggest this. You still there?
I'm here.
The governor's not going to call a special until unless we have a bill that she's approved and seen, and we come to her with a hard vote count that it'll pass.
See, there's some wisdom from Montgomery. Senator, I appreciate it. We'll talk again soon.
Thank you.
All right, there he goes, Senator Albritton, and we're coming right back. More Midday Mobile.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
Yeah, probably not worth a call since I ran late. I mean, that's what happens when you have Senator Albritton on. Hopefully, we got some questions answered in that discussion. Of course, more will be coming up. Will another vote change out there? We'll see. If one of the no votes changes, there's a lot of pressure on those members of the Senate right now to change votes. We'll watch it and be reporting on it. I know tomorrow morning starting early, 6 o'clock with Mobile Mornings here at FM Talk 106.5. On the way, Paul Feinbaum. I will see y'all tomorrow, or at least talk to you.